There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the bill we got? I mean, the bill we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
Really not a question, but how we start Midday Mobile on this Thursday. Glad to have you along on this little Friday edition of the show. Sitting at 88 at our studios, and we're like we're an island of a spot that has not gotten a thunderstorm in the last hour and a half, as we have thunderstorms moving their way through Mobile and Baldwin counties. More of that coming up throughout the afternoon. We'll get an update from Dr. Bill coming up at 12:35, and stay close for that. And Dalton, I just got to ask this. We discussed it this morning. I say ABBA. We're talking about Mamma Mia at the Joe Jefferson Playhouse. You say ABBA, right? I say ABBA. Of course, some people say ABBA. I'm an ABBA versus ABBA.
Well,
is it the ABBA Shrine Temple? It's the ABBA Shrine Temple.
As someone who saw the Branson, Missouri special show,
well, then you're an authority.
Best of ABBA. They said ABBA multiple times.
Yeah, it's Branson.
You're right. But I don't get to say that often, that I did see the best of ABBA in Branson, Missouri.
Were any members of ABBA in that group? Or?
Not one.
No, not one. Okay, just their interpretation of the music of ABBA.
Yes, it was three great, fantastic hours of all the ABBA songs, and I knew that one that we just heard on the promo.
That's it. I'm about like you, and I should know more.
And Dancing Queen, I knew that one too.
Okay, so two. Yeah, I got two. By the way, you tell you what we'll do. We'll give you a chance of winning some tickets to go see Mamma Mia and the music of ABBA, mm-hmm. or ABBA, coming up sometime between now and 2 o'clock. And you know what? We're going to ask our buddy Brendan Kirby, are you an ABBA or an ABBA?
I guess I would say ABBA.
Oh!
I'm not sure about the shrine, but my parents, huge ABBA fans, particularly my mother. So,
does she say ABBA? Does she say ABBA versus
she
ABBA?
Says ABBA. I believe she says ABBA. Okay. She says ABBA.
All right, just trying to check.
What does she know?
When in Sweden, or are they Norwegian? No, Sweden, right? They're Swedish. When in Sweden?
Yeah, I think
you're Swedish. Yeah, there we go. All right. I'm taking all your valuable time talking about groups from long ago. But the subject you wrote about at Yellowhammer News, I mean, I've always enjoyed your writing, whether it be at Yellowhammer News, it's on Life Set. But this one really is in my wheelhouse for the things that I'm, like, if I'm going to pick up a magazine at home, if I'm not even prepping for this job, if I'm just consuming media for fun, these kind of stories and discussions really do interest me. And you put this story up over at Yellowhammer News. Is the South a different country? New York Times op-ed misreads election data, or data. Tell me about this.
Yeah, well, the op-ed was written by a reporter at the newspaper in Portland, Maine, and he wrote a book that sort of laid out his theory that the United States has best understood our politics and our culture and our history by the fact that rather than one united country, we're really 11 distinct countries, and he's broken them down geographically. We would be part of the country he calls Deep South, which is parts of Texas, Louisiana, Arkansas, Mississippi, Tennessee, Alabama, Georgia, Florida, South Carolina, and the lower corner of North Carolina. So that's what he calls Deep South. And he's got 10 other of these countries. And his view is that explains our politics because of the people who settled those areas and the traditions they grew up with and even where they came from. And because we were descended from slave lords who modeled their society after slave states of the ancient world, we have a particular kind of politics that's lasted today. So that's sort of his theory in a nutshell.
It's interesting, though, the subcategories, and you pointed out, it's not as simplistic as in his theory of saying it's all of North Carolina, it's all of South Carolina, it's all of Tennessee, it's all of Alabama, or whatever. If he's talking about, say it's not all California, it's not all New Mexico, it's not all Arizona, he breaks them up within states to make these 11 countries, as you described, and guessing voting patterns from this. And I think it is interesting as he goes and says, here's the reasoning. And with us, I don't know why, the Deep South would have a different mentality than the Tidewater, right? The Tidewater, if you want to think about the history that he references there for what he calls the Deep South, would be similar to the Tidewater, if not exactly the same.
Yeah, it would. And also, for that matter, Greater Appalachia, which would include the northern part of Alabama and up into there. And, now there are differences, obviously, between, the people who kind of settled in the mountain areas and the hollers. But for a good chunk of that, it was also, slave areas, as was the Tidewater. All of these things, and I'm with you, I like these things, but they're arbitrary.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, they.
You got to draw a line someplace. It's not that I completely dismiss his theory. I mean, I think there's something to it. For instance, he has New Orleans and southern Louisiana as a separate country called New France because of the French influence. But then you could say that would apply to us as well.
Yeah.
In Mobile, that, I've often made the argument that if we were drawing up a state kind of from scratch, it would make sense to take the panhandle of Florida and draw it all the way across to maybe Houston and have like a Gulf state, and that we culturally and historically have more in common with New Orleans than with Huntsville.
Oh, absolutely.
He didn't do it that way.
Yeah, and it takes some insight that probably he doesn't have up there in Portland with that. That's very, very true. I think it would be interesting to do the same thing, do a breakdown of the state of Alabama into the different regions and why, because the settlement is different. I mean, he points out, the settlement of what he calls New France, like you said, in New Orleans, very much similar to, Mobile compared with somebody from Sylacauga or Huntsville, Alabama. But with all that being said, all that's been shuffled, too, because we all haven't stayed put in this country. We've moved around. Groups of people have moved from here to there, taking one culture and moving it westward or eastward or northward.
We have, and that migration has accelerated with modern technology and modern transport and the growth of multinational companies, and people move around much more than they did 150 years ago because it's a lot easier to do so. And then that gets, at what point is there a critical mass of newcomers to where they change the place? And then that doesn't even count the immigration from foreign countries, which has been going on for 150 years, and that changes a place too. But I think one way to look at this is the accents. The mm-hmm. accents, regional accents, are much less pronounced now than they were 100 years ago. Or
sure.
I mean, even 30 years ago, for that matter. And part of that is people moving around. Part of it is the dominance of TV and the sort of non-accent that dominates television. And it's changed. I know plenty of people grew up in the South.
I think I'll tell you what, we'll run the break, come back with Brendan. It was like the best connection ever for Brendan, so I was going with that. We will continue to go with that when we get back from the break. It is interesting. We put the Brendan story and the initial piece that we're talking about from the New York Times up on our Twitter feed at FM Talk 106.5. The New York Times piece, the maps that show the city versus country is not our political fault line. And that's what we're getting to here. That idea that, the cities vote for the Democrats and the hinterlands vote for the Republicans is not true all over the fruited plain. And we'll bounce around this discussion and get your texts and calls at 343-0106 when we return right here on Midday Mobile.
This information update is brought. This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 1218 FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile on this Thursday, little Friday. Looking forward to the weekend. Dr. Bill says Sunday may be your better outside day, but we'll get more from him coming up. Continue our conversation with Brendan Kirby from LifeZet.com. Also, Yellowhammer News and the author of Wicked Mobile, which would be different than a Wicked Sylacauga, a Wicked Montgomery, a Wicked Birmingham, right?
Yeah, there actually is a Wicked series that I just came up on. Last time I was in the bookstore, I saw they had a, and I can't remember, it was like Wicked Clark County or something like that, or Wicked Monroeville. I mean, it was one of the smaller cities not too far away from here.
Well, I can tell you some stories out of, yeah, I can tell you some wicked stories out of Washington County or Clark County, but that's a compendium.
It's a pretty good formula, because what you do is you just get a local writer, and you could make one of these for just about any community in America. So it's a pretty good gig they got going on there, I guess.
And I want to make sure, too, looking through some of the text we've gotten, that what we're talking about is, this is your piece from Yellowhammer News on a New York Times op-ed that says the maps that show city versus country is not our political fault line. And while I agree with you on a lot of the way he draws these 11 nations, this guy, Colin Woodward, does the 11 nations, I will say there is something to be said by just saying that every vote out there, let alone look at what happened in 2016, but that every vote is the cities are going to vote for the Democrats and the country's going to vote for the Republicans. That is not true in some areas it is, but it's not true everywhere.
It's true almost everywhere, though.
I think you can look at places where, okay, in the South, right? You look at places where, we'll say the cities or the suburbs vote Republican big time, right? You can see that. You can see that in the Appalachian area. He says they vote for at least in this last 2016 cycle overwhelmingly for Trump.
Sure, but the the Appalachian region tends to be pretty rural. But go look at that New York Times precinct map, and you will find little dots of blue everywhere. And wherever that dot of blue is, there's probably a city there. And it might not be a big city, because this phenomenon shows up even in places where it's not even a big city. I'll give you an example. Hagerstown, Maryland, where I used to work. It's in Washington County out in western Maryland. It's a pretty conservative place. Trump won it. It's voted Republican for years. And if you look at the map of Washington County, it's pretty red, except for there are these little spots of blue right where the urban core of Hagerstown is. And I say urban core, it's a city of only about 40,000, so it's not a big city, but there is blue right in there. So that explains it. You hit on something where I think there is a difference, and that's the suburbs.
Right. Yeah, and the suburbs here versus the suburbs, let's say, in Hagerstown, right? All right, well, we'll tell you what, Dalton, we'll get him on the phone. I don't know what's going on with this today. I don't know if it's weather-related or not, or just something happening, at his house. But we'll get him back on the telephone, because this is really interesting. And it's a breakdown, because what it's trying to tackle here is this notion that it is always city versus country. And I would say you look at some of the maps coming back from 2016, and they've been upended. That was one of the genius moves of candidate Donald Trump, is to upend some of the old ideas of where people would vote red and where people would vote blue. But you look at places in the desert Southwest, and I want you all to follow along, go to Twitter, and so you can get these maps and look along with us. You'll see places here where you're looking at suburbs. You're looking at areas that you would think would be voting Republican if you move those same populations to, let's say, the Southeast. Or if you move those same populations to the Mountain West, you would say those are Republican. Well, but in these places in the Southwest, they're blue. They're Democrat votes. And then you flip things around and look at places. I know that Brendan and I have a little disagreement there, but if you look at some of the charts here for places in Appalachia, then you see in Appalachia places you think would vote blue that vote red. So
if you look at suburban areas, so you have to take demographics into account. And in the Southwest, where the non-native born population is higher, you have suburbs that are more diverse. And this is the case in Philadelphia too. That partially explains why the suburbs are more Democratic in those places, because they're more diverse, and non-white voters, wherever they live, tend to vote Democrat.
Is that the, I mean, the, people, you know, say it all the time, but you talk about the South. Is that the takeaway here for the South, whether it be the deep South that's on his map here, or what we would consider the deep South in other maps, that it is black voters voting Democrat, and those black voters live in urban areas, although I would point out in Alabama, there's a lot of rural folks, black folks, but it shows that, you know, the cities are going to be, these urban areas are going to be blue because of African-American voters. And then the areas outside there are going to be red because of white voters. Is it that simplistic?
No, it's not that simple, because it doesn't explain. There are a lot of cities in this country where the black population isn't very big, and they're still voting Democratic. That's obviously a factor, and it's a factor in the rural areas. You know, if you say, show me a rural area, it's going to vote Trump. That's true, except you need a little asterisk for the rural places where black voters make up a majority of the population. And that's what you see in Alabama. All through the Black Belt, those counties voted for Hillary Clinton and vote Democratic every year because of the racial makeup of them. And black voters, whether they live in Mobile or the Black Belt or Detroit or anywhere really in this country, vote more or less the same in national elections. Republicans generally get about 10% of the black vote, and there really isn't regional variation in that. You know, the black voters vote pretty uniformly wherever they live.
But the change comes, the opposite of that is white voters, right? It pointed out that you look in different parts of the country, and who would be a Republican voter maybe by demographic in one part of the country, they're a Democrat voter in another.
Yeah, and generally as a rule of thumb, the higher the minority population in an area, the more polarized the voting tends to be.
We lost him again. And by the way, too, the people on the text line, I'm not cutting him off. It's the lack of technology that's cutting him off. It's something to do with broadband and thunderstorms and those kind of things. No, I am not. Somebody said, no, you're cutting him off just when he... No, I'm not cutting anybody off. I'll tell you what we'll do. Dalton, let's run to a quick break, and we'll try to get Brendan on the other line and get that fixed as we go forward here on Midday Mobile, because I really want y'all to hear more about this story. It's very, very interesting. You can check out some of the maps we're talking about in details over on our Twitter feed at FM Talk 106.5.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5. Call Sean now at 343-0106.
By 1228, FM Talk 106.5. Midday Mobile on this Thursday. And keep them coming. Some good text here at 343-0106, 343-0106. Talking with Brendan Kirby, his story over at Yellowhammer News, and a bigger discussion of this op-ed from the New York Times about how we vote in this country, and this op-ed writer linking it, he thinks, who settled these 11 nations, right?
Right, and he divides them up, you know, we would be in the nation of Deep South, as he calls it. Up in New England, New York, and the upper Midwest, he calls that Yankeedom, and he's got 11 different countries, and his theory is that explains voting patterns, and my theory is that it's much more relevant to look at the demographics of a place, and also, you know, in terms of racial demographics, but then also in terms of urbanization. And if you have a state that's more heavily urban, that's going to be a Democratic-leaning place, and if you have a state that's more rural, you know, if it's rural and white, it's going to be more Republican. If it's rural and black, it will vote just like a big city would, because black voters overwhelmingly vote Democrat. And I think that's really the Occam's razor, simplest way to analyze it.
Yeah, as we look at this, I mean, yes, it is. The simple part is the easy part, and I'm with you. Yeah, I mean, you can go back and look at the voting patterns, let alone for 2016. Before, you can see, you know, people say left coast, you know, east coast and west coast, and then these certain places, these big urban centers, these are your votes for Democrats. But look at all the, you know, geographic landmass that votes for Republicans. I'd like to point out, once again, it's about people and not acreage. But it's maybe if people move to an urban center, move there and change voting patterns or reinforce voting patterns, because we have become more and more urbanized as a country. I mean, that's happening.
Yeah, we have, and I think what we have is the migration is tending to reinforce voting patterns. There was a famous book a number of years ago called The Big Sort.
Let's do this. We will run the break and then come back with Brendan. Finally got him back on a good connection here because this is reinforcing. So if you move to a city, you reinforce your voting patterns in that place. Or you move to the country, you reinforce that. We'll find out more from Brendan when we return right here on Midday Mobile. Right, 1235 FM Talk 1065. Continue our conversation now on a solid link with the Brendan Kirby Command Center in Baldwin County. I want to read a paragraph here from this New York Times piece that was referenced in Brendan's story that we're talking about, too, that I've linked up. I'd like you to look at to kind of have an idea of what the reference is, the Colin Woodward story. But this paragraph from early on in the piece says, sectionalism isn't and has never been and never has been as simple as North versus South or an effete and domineering East against a rugged, freedom-minded West. Rather, our true regional fissure can be traced back to contrasting ideals of the distinct European colonial cultures that first took root on the eastern and southern rims of what is now the United States and then spread across much of the continent in mutually exclusive settlement bands, laying down the institutions, symbols, and cultural norms later arrivals would encounter and by large assimilate into. And Brendan, nice language, nice writing by the guy, but, you know, all those different nations, a lot of them went through certain ports in certain places and fanned out slowly. Some fanned out quickly. But I mean, to say that they didn't leave some sort of influence back in the East before they went West, I think that's also probably skipping over an important part of it.
Yeah, I mean, again, I think there's something to this, but I think this was more powerful a century ago than it is now. You know, the people who decided they were going to pick up from relatively comfortable lives in the East and head West, when no one lived out there but Indians and it was really dangerous and you had to really scramble, you know, it took a certain kind of person to do that. So the people who settled in those areas, you know, I think were different, you know, than the people they left behind. And same with the immigrants. When the immigrants, people who choose to, you know, leave their own country and come to a new country and learn a new language and, you know, those people are different, you know, than the people I saw. So there are these differences. It's just, it's been blended and smoothed out, I think, over the last century of everyone moving around. And we're talking about, you know, when newcomers come, do they change the place or does the place change them?
Right. You said they reinforce. Explain that. You said you think they reinforce voting patterns.
And this is based on a book called The Big Sort. And the sociologist he compared the 1976 election with the 2000 election. And both those elections, what they had in common is they were very close. The popular vote was very, very close because we all remember 2000, the disputed election and all that just came down to Florida. The Electoral College was close. The popular vote was close. But if you look at that granular level, it was much different. And the number of blowout counties, this is where it'd be a county where one candidate beat the other by 10 points or more. He called those blowout counties. There were way, way more blowout counties in 2000 than there were in the 1976 race, suggesting that even though the overall vote was distributed about the same, at the county level it wasn't. And his theory is that when people move into a place, they naturally gravitate toward people like them. And not intentionally, because I mean, anyone who relocates for a job, you know, they typically, I'm guessing, don't look up voting history to decide where they're going to live.
right.
But it just sort of works out that way because the kinds of church you go to, or whether you go to church at all, or you know, what kind of lifestyle you're going to have, you know, these things are good predictors of voting patterns, which is probably why we have this urban split. People who want an urban lifestyle with lots of people close in. You know, it's a certain kind of lifestyle, and for whatever reason, those people tend to vote Democrat, and people who want more of a suburban lifestyle or don't want lots of people around them even further out of the suburbs, I don't know if it's they tend to be more individualistic, you know, they don't want, you know, government hassling about zoning or what they can do.
tend to be more Republican. And this reinforces itself over time, because that's what happens. I mean, if you look at Baldwin County, which has undergone tremendous growth, and people moving from all over the country, that growth hasn't changed the politics of Baldwin County. You know, Baldwin County is just as Republican now as it was 20 years ago.
If not more. If not possibly more. So, I mean, does the person make the place, or the place make the person? You're saying it's the people, right? It's not that you move somewhere and then you get into that vibe of wherever it's there, but you migrate, if you do migrate, to somewhere that already agrees with you.
Yeah, I mean, people can change a place by moving. We see this with immigration. When the immigrant population reaches a certain threshold and the naturalization rate reaches a certain threshold, that will change the politics if it was a Republican place. A generation ago, when people started to move to southern Alabama from the north, and they were Republicans up north, that helped grow the Republican Party in the south when it was a solid Democratic base. But what's been going on recently, say the last quarter century, is that people are just moving. You know, if you're a Democrat and you move to this area from someplace else, you're more likely to settle in Mobile and reinforce the Democratic nature of the city. And if you're a Republican, you're more likely to go to Baldwin County or maybe someplace that's more rural in Mobile County and reinforce that. And that's just sort of what's been going on. And I don't think it's a conspiracy. I don't think,
right.
People are intentionally choosing it because of the politics. But that's just sort of the way it's naturally sorted out. And that's why the number of competitive counties has gone down. We don't have many competitive counties where it's a true kind of swing county. And there's lots of them still around the country, but fewer than there were 30 years ago.
Is that partially because of redistricting as well, or do you think this is not connected to that?
Well, I mean, you know, redistricting, makes the congressional districts, less competitive.
Right, yeah, not for the president, but, I mean, it seems to go back to what we're talking about. It reinforces, right? I mean, if you redraw lines, if you gerrymander, you can reinforce that. You can make a place even more red or even more blue.
And that would explain, if you're looking at, at the boundaries of congressional districts, but it wouldn't really explain why that is of counties, because congressional districts cut through counties and mm-hmm. that sort of thing. So you could draw a line around the city. So, and this is what happens. I mean, when we look at districts, if Republicans are drawing the map, they will draw the line around the city to take in the Republican-leaning suburbs and put them someplace else to get a safe district, and they'll try and pack all those Democrats into as few districts as possible in the city. And that's why, that's how you get maps that you want. But that doesn't really explain why the counties themselves have migrated that way. You could have a county that, touches maybe three different congressional districts. It's a very interesting social phenomenon to me. And, this is beyond maybe sort of the hot political story of the day,
right,
or the gotcha thing, and bash Trump or whatever people talk about on a day-to-day basis. But I'm like you, I find the sort of the long-term trends interesting and explain why we are the country we are.
Yeah, and what is your takeaway? You spent so much time for so many years down in the data mine. When you look at stuff like this, is there anything to take from this as a projection? We've seen what's happened to this point. Does it make you lean one way or another where we go in voting going forward in this country? Is there a takeaway?
Yeah. I mean, what I would say is that as the country gets more diverse and the non-white share, the non-white, the non-white and Hispanic share of the population grow, it will make it harder for Republicans to win elections. But, and lots of people pointed this out in predicting that Republicans won't be competitive at a certain point. But the other thing that it possibly could do is it could drive white voters even more to the Republican Party. And if things are polarized, you could have a situation where it's not just the Deep South where there's this polarized voting, but you might have, Trump won because he got an even bigger share of the white vote than a Republican typically does.
Right.
So I think those forces kind of balance each other out a little bit. The other thing to watch is the suburbs in the South. Are the suburbs in the South, fundamentally different than the ones in the North, or are they just 20 years behind the curve? And are we going to see the Atlanta suburbs look a lot more like the Philadelphia suburbs in 10 or 20 years. If that's the case, then Georgia will go from a reliably Republican state to a competitive state to possibly a Democratic-leaning state.
Yeah, I think that is interesting. And you say in 20 years, but you know, I think about this. Friends I have that live in the Atlanta area and in those suburbs, and I tell you right now that there's not only just anecdotally, well, it's all anecdotal, but with people I know, but going to their neighborhoods and looking in 2016 and seeing the number of Clinton signs. You know, it was, and these are, if you took these people in these neighborhoods and put them somewhere outside Atlanta, you'd be like, it'd be strong red district. And I don't know how, I wasn't with them when they sat down and voted, but I know what the yard signs look like.
Yeah, well, I mean, this is a trend that is happening. It just hasn't reached to the point where it's, you know, really causing Republicans to lose statewide races. But one of the very interesting things to do with the 2016 results is look at the places where Hillary Clinton did better than Obama did. There aren't many. You know, most of the country shifted Republican from Obama, but there are some counties that got more Democratic, and you know, the suburbs of Atlanta were one of the places where that happened.
I want to read, y'all read more about this. Of course, go to yellowhammernews.com or Brendan, they could go straight to the Twitter feed too.
Yeah, you can go to @BrendanKKirby.
All right. And if they want to pick up a copy of Wicked Mobile, not Wicked Clark County, but Wicked Mobile, how do they?
Wicked Mobile, you can go, you know, Amazon, you can go to local bookstores. You know, the hot fries option that you talked about in some convenience stores where they randomly, the books randomly appear from time to time. That's a possibility as well.
All right, good stuff. Thanks for your time. Thanks for your insight on this. We need more of these stories. We'll talk about them in the future.
All right, great. Thanks.
All right, Brendan Kirby joining us right here on Midday Mobile. We're coming right back. Your phone calls at 343-0106, 343-0106. Also, some text to work through here as well. I think it is interesting, and if you're looking at this and wonder where things are going, why things end up where they are, when you look at voting trends and all that, what does it say about our country? What's your take on it? Also, coming up next hour, by the way, something really fun that is brand new to the show, and a guest who's going to join us, this guy John Marshall, who's known as Mighty John the Record Guy. If you have any piece of music, you got a record from 1902 to present day, and you want to know what it is worth, right? What that piece of vinyl is worth, that Bee Gees album is worth, this guy can tell you off the top of his head. It's really cool. We'll talk to him coming up after 1 o'clock. Y'all stay close.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 12:52, FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Great event coming up again tomorrow night. Another great one at Cottage Hill Package, corner Cottage Hill and Hillcrest. So we got a free tasting event going on with Orpheus Brewing out of Atlanta. And Jimmy, sales rep, is going to be on hand to tell you about their Atlanta Tart Plum Saison, their Serpent Bite Dry Hopped Golden Sour Ale, their Over and Over Pineapple Sour Ale, their Transmigration of Souls. Nice. Transmigration of Souls Double IPA and their Wandering Blues Blueberry Sour Ale, plus some more. And of course, when you come out to the events at Cottage Hill Package, you usually get some swag from those brewers, hats and stickers and all that kind of cool stuff. And you get to sample a beer. You know, I mean, if you're going to buy a six pack of a craft beer, you know, you pretty much want to know that it's good before you do it, that you like it before you do it. That's one of the reasons these events are really good. If you're a craft beer fan like me, you go out and you can sample some. You go, okay, that one is not for me, or that one's fantastic. I think I will get six of those. And of course, when you're there, check out the selection of fine spirits, wines, the giant, what do my kids say? Ginormous. This is, the kids say constantly with the ginormous. So I'll adopt my 12-year-olds, the ginormous humidor there at Cottage Hill Package. So big it has its own tobacconist to lead you around. Corner of Cottage Hill and Hillcrest, of course, online at Cottage Hill Package, and check them out on Facebook, Cottage Hill Package. All right, a couple things here, and some of these stories have come up this morning. We're giving you more information on the story out of Davidson, which is, this is going to be interesting. And you, at least me, I asked why this happens now versus earlier. As Davidson's high school head football coach was placed on administrative leave yesterday, This is a, I guess, an update here. Of course, a story that's been going on for quite a while. As Fred Riley now on administrative leave, he's been under increasing pressure lately. Story from MyNBC 15 says Riley's been under increasing pressure lately as lawsuits have been filed against him and the school after a series of alleged hazing videos spread across social media. Several parents tried to get a warrant signed last Friday for Riley's arrest. Now, cell phone footage shows Rodney Kim Jr. Being beaten by his fellow teammates inside a football locker room. And now they said there's another video out there, too, that's floating around. So we'll see. He's now on administrative leave, and that's going to be obviously a big, big deal just on the football side of it, right? As it's time to be, I mean, this is getting down to what the last, let's see, we started August 1st with practice, right? Or whenever they start August 1st still, like we used to. And then you got games coming up very, very soon. So this is a big deal. We'll watch this story and give you the latest on it. Also, an update on the story from this morning with the strike going on at some area Coca-Cola bottlers right here in Mobile, in Robertsdale, Leroy, and Ocean Springs. Note here from the company Coca-Cola United. They're the people who bought out, I guess, those and maybe other different Coca-Cola bottlers. They say our good faith effort to negotiate a new labor contract, I guess, has failed. Teamsters, Local 991 leaders unwilling to come to agreement have called a strike as of today. That's what we were talking about this morning. They were striking as of this morning, I guess still striking now. According to Jim Gookins, principal officer with Teamsters Local 991, the union, an agreement with Coca-Cola expired on July 15th, and the company, Coca-Cola, presented a new proposal to the union. Gookins tells our news partners at WKRG, the first offer was rejected by the members on Saturday, July 14th, with an authorization to strike. The parties agreed to an extension through August 5th and resumed negotiations through July 31st. The company at that time presented another proposal to be voted on Saturday, August 4th. The proposal was rejected by the members with another authorization to strike. He confirms that Coca-Cola United and the union will meet with federal mediators sometime on Monday in hopes of meeting an agreement. If an agreement is not made, employees may strike. Details of the proposed agreements have not been released to the media. That's us. However, anonymous tips have said that the conflict is about fair wages. All right. So, and as of today, I saw the trucks coming out of there, out of the bottler. I've talked to people who said they saw people getting deliveries of Coca-Cola products at convenience stores. I guess the word we got, I think it was through Katarina Lukatich with News 5, who said she was told that they were bringing in buses with employees to work at the facilities here from other areas, I guess. And those people were running the facilities here in, I guess, Mobile and Leroy and Ocean Springs and Robertsdale. So when does this cause an issue? Like, when do you not have Coca-Cola products? I don't know. I don't want to cause any panic, any scare, and people, because I need to make sure I get to do my panic buying of Diet Coke before y'all do. So right now, don't worry about it. Everything's fine. Everything's squared away. All right, coming up next hour, this is a guest. We have never had this guy. I can't believe we haven't, but never had this guy on the show. He reached out to us the other day. He's Mighty John the Record Guy. And I'm looking at some information on him. He is like, he's a savant with the value of those records, that collection of vinyl, the vinyl you've been holding on to. I know a lot of y'all have sent me pictures in the past of some cool stuff. Get those in your mind, because we're going to give you a chance to ask him questions about what your vinyl's worth, and he can tell you off the top of his head. And that, hey, you may have some extra spending cash when you hear what your vinyl's worth. John Marshall joins us next, right here on Midday Mobile.